everybody in need. Another episode of Fantasy Baseball Elite here, courtesy of FantasyGuru.com. I am one of your hosts, Jeff Manns. Follow my work at Jeff_Manns on Twitter, the Jeff Manns, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, and the like. Find my work at FantasyGuru.com and GuruElite.com. With me, as he always is, the voice of fantasy baseball, as far as I'm concerned, Ray Flowers, in the house. How are you, Ray?
I'm pretty good, Jeff. How's it going? You excited that football's done and now we're full throttle baseball?
I got the Alliance of American Football. That's what are you talking about? Like, football's still going. It never dies. This is death to you, right? Like, when you hear a new football league starting, you're like, no, this can't be. It's like another poltergeist has infiltrated your home, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's I will say this, that you do have the rankings over at Guru Elite, right?
Fantasy Guru.
Oh, they're Fantasy Guru. Oh, that's right. What am I saying?
Yes.
Mistaken.
Fantasy Guru is like the new hub. Like, Guru Elite's wonderful for all of our DFS daily fantasy, but like everything else is at Fantasy Guru. Hopefully people are taking that.
I'm confused myself. Yeah. Obviously it's season long, so it's over at Fantasy Guru. That's where we have the season long aspect of things. But yeah, I know you got your rankings up there. I was excited about your number one running back. I know you talked about him on Sirius XM.
Yeah,
and you got all the positions ranked. So I know you're ready to go, Jeff. I admit my knowledge of that league is pretty small. I did listen to you, and you know, I know that there's no extra points, and we're going for 2-point conversions and no kickoffs and those kind of things. So it should be fun to watch if you're into that kind of thing. But I'm kind of looking at baseball right now.
Still cold in the northern states, that's for sure. But the good thing about being where I'm at here in Arizona is not only do I get an Alliance of American Football team and franchise, me and my son, I think, are planning to go to one of these games. But also, just 2 weeks from Cactus League play, my friend, in baseball and getting that ready. And hopefully you and I will be broadcasting some of these Fantasy Baseball League podcasts from some Cactus League venues, which will be a lot of fun here in a few weeks. So, Super Bowl hangover, that's done. It is Fantasy Baseball. It's officially time to start preparing. Obviously, we have the draft guide available to everybody over at fantasyguru.com. So go there, check it out. Hopefully, you guys, I've been, 700 players ranked already. And listen, Ray and I bicker like two old ladies all the time. Ray doesn't – our biggest thing right now on the Fantasy Guru site is that the rankings don't update fast enough. It's something that, you know, I went through with the football side of things, and where the way we do our rankings – and we have to, you know, realign everything, and then we hit submit button. It takes a little while to go through. Ray, behind the curtain talk here, you were screaming at me just the other day that some of your rankings weren't taking hold quick enough for you.
I need this to happen immediately, Jeff Manns. Immediately.
like Ray, it's 2:30 Pacific time on a Tuesday. On February 4th or 3rd or 5th, whatever it was. Like, whose new needs your update from, I don't even know who it was. Who the hell was it that you were updating?
I think at the time I was texting you, it was Nick Goodrum of the
Nick Goodrum.
Yeah, of the Tigers. They announced that he's likely to be the starting shortstop. So I wanted to bump him up the rankings a little bit because of that news. Take him from the 40s into the 30s, and it was taking hours, Jeff.
And it drove Ray crazy. Ugh. Don't worry. So this guy is on top of it, everybody. His players are all ranked there. So there's literally over 30 articles up now. Ted Schuster and I are working on a fantastic little thing for daily fantasy players. It's also good for seasonal fantasy players as well. A split breakdown and a team-by-team lineup and rotations and all that stuff, which will be out here towards the middle or later in the month of February. But we are smart, and the prices only will go up as the months of March and April get to us. So we'll get in for the early bird pricing right now. This podcast, obviously, free for everybody. And if you're enjoying it, if you like it, please hit it on iTunes or Podbean or wherever you're listening to it. Give us a rating. Give us some comments, your feedback. Always much appreciated. And tell a friend as well if they're into baseball and fantasy baseball there as well. We're going to get to some questions that we posted on Twitter at Baseball Guys for Ray, @Jeff_Manns for this podcast. We'll get to some of that. We've got some articles that Ray wrote over at FantasyGuru.com. We're going to break those down for everybody as well. But Ray, right now you and I are almost done with our FSTA Fantasy Baseball League draft. Now, granted, the league is not over yet, and you're pretty much spinning out of control because of it. Right?
I don't like – slow drafts are the worst thing ever.
You can't handle slow drafts.
They're the worst things ever. Yeah, I don't understand why we can't just sit there and say, all right, let's on Thursday sit down for 2 hours and finish a draft. Like, I don't know why we can't commit to that versus having something take 3 weeks. It just drives me bonkers.
So we are, 27 – or in the 27th round of a 29-round draft there. But the other big news is that the reason we'll be broadcasting from some Cactus League venues here on the podcast later this month and in the first week of March is that you'll be down here in Arizona with me because that's the League of Alternative Baseball Reality, the labor drafts that you've been a part of for about a decade now or so. You'll be down here drafting those. SiriusXM's Fantasy Sports Radio will be broadcasting those. We'll have conversation about those. A lot of only leagues. Mm-hmm. Auction leagues there, so we'll get into a lot of that conversation in the days and weeks ahead. And then both of us are drafting in the Tout Wars event that we always do, although I will fully admit that I took the easy way out and am not traveling to New York City this year, which I feel really bad about because now Ray's stuck.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, in fairness to me, your old lady was supposed to go with you, and so I was going to be the third wheel of this trip. And now all of a sudden she's out.
So now we're blaming her.
Yes.
Oh, 100%.
I see. Because it's everybody's fault but my own.
Okay. Of course. Yeah.
So that's why that's what's going on with that. So I won't be in New York, but I have a draft and follow league, something that's new to Tout Wars for 2019, and it's interesting. It's an interesting type of league. It's essentially, I guess, what they would call a best ball league in fantasy football. That's what we call them. And best ball. Fantasy football has been huge over the last couple of years, and it continues to evolve and gain momentum. But, Ray, my question for you here, why no fantasy baseball best ball leagues? Why? It feels like the fantasy baseball best ball is a better fit than football, in my opinion. Why has this not caught on yet?
It's a good question. I think one of the reasons is, like, in fantasy football, you can do these best ball drafts, and even if you do a slow draft, how long does it take? You know, because it's 16 rounds, you're usually something 20 rounds, or not as long. You're talking about kicker and defenses, who cares? So the positions are easier to go through. When you're doing baseball, there's more rounds, there's more positions, it takes longer. Maybe that's part of it, you know, just the duration of the draft itself. But I think that it could also just be the fact that it's newer for the industry. You know, it's. I don't really have an answer. I mean, does anyone – I'm not aware of this. Does anyone push it aggressively? Do any sites push it aggressively? Maybe that's part of the problem too, Jeff. We don't have anyone – like in football, you know, my fantasy league or whatever. In baseball, do we have someone aggressively pushing that format?
I don't know. I don't think so. No. And, I mean, I've talked a lot about it, and I'm sort of an outsider – these days when it comes to fantasy baseball, mostly because people, you know, all of our peers are old and I'm just telling it like it is. They're old, they're stuck in their ways. They don't want, and it's not about being old. I mean, you and I are old, but what happens is they don't want to change and they want the game. The game is the same as it's been from 1986 when I started playing. No, it's not. It is so different. The game of baseball is so different than it was back then, it's not even funny. And fantasy baseball has to follow suit. Fantasy football has adapted to the times. In my opinion, best ball fantasy baseball is better than best ball fantasy football. Why? Because Ray always makes this argument. Ray, you think rotisserie style mm-hmm. fantasy baseball is the best, correct?
Correct.
Why is it the best? Why is it better than head-to-head leagues or monthly leagues or all this kind of stuff? Make your case.
Yeah, in my opinion, the reason it is baseball is not – well, football is the same way, but baseball is not set up to be recorded in a day or two or four. It's just not that way. There's too many things that go on the field, too many things outside the control of a player that if we short-circuit that one quick example, batting average and balls in play, that number everyone hears about, you need about 800 plate appearances for that to normalize. 800. No one even gets 700 anymore plate appearances in a season. So it's more than an entire season. So if we're looking at all these individual components and we're trying to figure out this week versus that week, this 5 days versus that. It's just not the way baseball is recorded. I think it leaves too much variance. Instead of looking at who someone is overall, we're more concerned about spurts and hot you know, periods of time and all of that. So looking at the entire season allows us the best chance we can to have all the white noise dissipate and to get enough information to find some stability.
So over the long term, over the duration, fantasy baseball, that you're trying to draft the best team that will be from game one through 162. When you have 162 events, games in this case, that take place, you're going to have ups, dramatic ups and downs. Yep. In a previous podcast, we talked about Jose Ramirez, and one of the reasons I don't like him is the terrible first couple weeks and terrible end of the season. Huge dips. He's the best hitter in the league and the worst, and the best and the worst, and it's up and down. That drives me crazy. So what I think, though, best ball leagues, I think best ball leagues are perfect for those to not overreact and underreact to the day in and day out elements of fantasy baseball. Draft the best team, and if the guy, you know, no matter what happens to us all, I'll go back to my every single year I talk about the Mike Trout, what was 2012, the year he came up, and was second to Miggy Cabrera in the MVP race, right? The thing with that, Mike Trout was drafted in leagues and drafted in rounds 18 to 24, somewhere around there. And I remember that he started in the minor leagues for first 3-4 weeks of the season. And I was home one afternoon for whatever reason, and the news broke. Oh, Mike Trout's coming up early May. Holy cow, here we go. And I'm like, oh, he's available. Click, 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 click. I didn't draft him. Somebody else had drafted him. But after 4 weeks, injuries happen and whatever, and you're tired. So so I got him, and it propelled me to a championship, and I think another, you know, pretty good performance in the other league where I got him. And it was I had no business getting that, really. I just happened to be there at the right time. The team that drafted him got nothing because he couldn't hold them because of all the injuries and everything else. In a draft and follow or a best ball type atmosphere, that team would have had Mike Trout. They took the chance on him 18. In baseball, there's so much that happens. And with the 10-day DL and the abundance of DL stints and the amount of turnover in lineups and the little number of starting pitchers that pitch over 200 innings anymore, it's getting almost impossible. It's all about moves. And that's why I tell you all the time, and I argue this point, it's like, really, fantasy baseball isn't about the best draft. The draft is almost irrelevant, really. It's you win or you lose based on your moves. Moves. You have to be on top of it. You're never going to win a fantasy baseball league unless you're on top of it, on top of the weekly, or if you do daily roster moves. You know, you could have the greatest draft ever, but something's going to get in your way. Even if you draft Mike Trout, you may drop him by May because he's not up. Ronald Acuna last year, same kind of difference. Juan Soto, nobody drafted last year. But, you know, Vlad Guerrero, if he starts in the minor leagues this year and he comes up and has a monster season, the numbers are all great, but you drafted him and then didn't get him because he didn't make the team and you had too many DL spots. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you better hope the drafts aren't important because I'm looking at your FSTA draft, Jeff, and
So it's a great draft, and don't think for a minute I didn't read your stinking players to avoid article, that piece of crap that you basically listed all my players in there.
Right.
I am going to pounce you in this league. Well, I won't because I will likely be out by July, but wherever we're at in July, I'm going to take a picture, and that's the end of the season for me.
Okay. Well, I'll say this, too. In the Fantasy Guru Draft Guide, the most recently released article today, the home run, I gave you props in there. I talked about Daniel Palka.
Oh, thank you. Oh, dude, you're such a backhander. Dude, Ray blasted me on instant message and on the phone the other day when I drafted Palka. Now you like it?
Well, just I wanted to give you some positivity because I know I'm always putting you down because you don't know what you're talking about. I wanted to make you feel a little bit better about yourself.
I will challenge you to a baseball conversation anytime. You may win, but I will hold my own, my friend.
You will. No, but you're going back to the main point.
Yes. Daniel Palka.
Oh, yeah, Daniel Palka. Rounding out the top 10 in home run distance and leading the way in exit velocity on home runs last year.
We got to summarize this because I got Daniel Palka, and I am a White Sox fan, just so everybody knows. And I am on record last year's hating Daniel Palka. I got him in the 25th round, 10th pick of the 25th round. And I needed my – when I look at my ratios, and something Ray and I will talk about in the days and weeks ahead here on Fantasy Baseball Elite, is that I am very strict by the numbers, and especially in a 5x5 roto league like we're playing. And I'm short on home runs right now, so I'm trying to find some late home runs. I get a guy who's hitting fifth in the lineup, hit, what did he hit, 26 bombs last year, and has that kind of power. 10th pick in the 25th round, I'll take it. I would not have taken Polk in the 19th round even. 20th round, I wouldn't have taken him. But 25th, I was very happy with the pick, and I think I got a guy who will help me, especially early in the season, use some of that power. Don't forget, I also have Eloy Jimenez, who I drafted much earlier. So now that spot, I kind of hedged that spot in a way.
It could work out the way you're describing it, Jeff, beautifully. It could also work out extremely poorly. I think that's just...
What's the poorly? What's the downside of Polk in the 25th?
The downside is he's terrible.
Wow. So was he terrible last year?
Yes.
Based on what? As a 25th pick, he didn't return 25th round value?
Oh, of course he didn't. No, I told you the other day, I picked him up for $2 in our first waiver run in labor, I think, last year, in AL-only league. I mean, I had him on my team the whole year. So, no.
He had 27 home runs.
He doesn't walk, and he doesn't hit the ball. That's the problem. When he hits the ball, he rips the hell out of it. Like I said,
but this isn't points. You'll get negative for strikeouts. So it doesn't matter.
No, but his approach is terrible. He could hit 180 in April and be on the bench in May.
Hit 240 last year.
He doesn't do anything offensively other than hit home runs. He doesn't take a walk. He's not a base stealer. He doesn't get on base. He's got power. And the problem with this profile is he's a 27-year-old nobody who easily could lose his job in the lineup. It could be him and that's called up that could take it straight from him. Could happen.
There you go. Thank you.
I'm totally
exactly
good.
What I told you. I took in the 25th round a guy with 27 bombs last year.
It's a very un-Jeff Mann's pick, though. I would have thought that you would reach for another youngster or something like that. It's best case scenario, he plays a little bit more than last year and he hits 31 home runs while batting 230. That's like the best case scenario. And again, is that going to get you $3? Is that going to get you 25th round value? Sure. But he's not going to be a 15th round player. It's just not going to happen.
Wait a minute. How is he not going to be a 15th round? 31 home runs?
Because Jeff, he doesn't steal bases. He doesn't get on base enough to have a huge run scored total. Yeah. And I don't think he's going to be hitting anywhere near a large run-producing slot. Because he's
in the middle of the lineup. He's fifth.
Yeah, he's fourth. Not going to be with this approach long-term. It just doesn't work.
If his approach doesn't work, it's because somebody beat him out. And the guy who will beat him out is Eloy Jimenez, who's also on this team. And by the way, who are all these guys that are stealing all these bases? Where's your power speed combos in the 25th round?
Said that you get us power. When did I say that?
You said he doesn't. He won't return more than $3 of value because he doesn't steal bases. Stole two.
He stole.
Well, I mean that by today's day and age, two's decent.
Oh my gosh!
How Jeff many Mann. Players stole more than 20 bases last year? Maybe 15. Maybe
it's not. Don't take my point to be you should be taking Kian Broxson there, which, who, by the way, I'm surprised you wouldn't have taken Kian Broxson instead of Daniel Palka, if we're being honest.
I needed power, though.
He's been a 2020 guy. He doesn't have the power. That's fair. My point is Palka is just a bad player. If he gets the opportunity, if he gets 500 plate appearances, if they roll him out there, he could hit 30 home runs. But he's a bad offensive player. So you're living on the edge of it has to go right like it did last year. Because, again, I'm not trying – it's not going to be better than it was last year with that approach. It's just not. He's not going to hit 260. It's not happening. He doesn't steal bases. That removes the value that he could gain there for you. So if he's not hitting 260 and he's not getting on base and he's striking out a ton, don't forget, Tim Anderson does the same thing. Yoan Moncada does the same thing. At some point, he's not going to score runs. I mean, you look at it last year, he barely doubled his home run total in the run scored column, which is bad.
Mike Trout did too.
He's just a moderate play. That's it. It's fine. It's just he's a moderate play.
Well, moderate play, 25th round. You're talking circles. Talking in circles. Because the runs scored and stolen bases are – if you're not going to get 30 – you're not going to get 15 steals on a potential 30 home run hitter there. You got to address what you don't have. When you're in the 25th round, you have to – secure yourself and insure yourself on what your team doesn't have. Ideally, right now, Polka's on the bench. We have six bench spots. There's only 23 starters. So 23 people start on this team. Polka's not even a starter. I mean, 30 potential. not just potential, a guy who fell 3-4 short last year, 30 home run hitter on the bench. It's a good pick. That's how you get your run. If you're going to put Daniel Polk in your lineup every single day, yes, it's going to drag down your other ratios. If he's on your bench and you need that spike in home runs, and you get him playing at home where the ball carries very well in the summertime, or you get him playing at some of these other places, and he gives you that spike you need, it's exactly the kind of pick people should be making. Don't listen to Ray. Ray,
by the way, I do have a write-up for those people that haven't seen it yet. It's ongoing. I keep updating it as we make the picks. It's at fantasyguru.com. It's the 2019 FSTA draft. It's free. Everyone that's listening now can go read it, whether they subscribed or not. So you can go check it out and see my picks and Jeff's there in the draft.
There you go. And whose team do you think will win? At Jeff_Manns, at Baseball Guys. Hit us up both. My team's good.
The only way they vote for you is because they like you more than me. Your team's terrible.
My team is really not terrible. This is a good team. I haven't even looked at your team, to be quite honest with you. Yeah. I do notice, though, and we'll talk about today, we're going to get into players to target. All right, that's one of the articles in the draft guide over at Fantasy Guru. But we're also going to get probably next episode who to avoid. And literally, like everybody on my team, which is Ray's team. Like, look, I'm looking at your team here. Brian Dozier, Eric Thames, who doesn't even play, McCutcheon, Ray's still hanging on to 10 years ago. Adam Eaton, who doesn't even play baseball anymore, realistically. Chris Bryant doesn't have a shoulder anymore. Austin Hedges and Luke Roy, two terrible catchers. Jay Bruce, Daniel Polka versus Jay Bruce. At least Polka's got a heartbeat.
Oh my gosh, Jay Bruce will outperform Polka this year, and he qualifies at two positions. Are you kidding?
Yeah, two positions where he could suck at both for you. That's awesome. Oh my God. That's wonderful. He strikes out. He has the same approach as Polka. No, the same approach.
He's better. B, he's not going to lose his job. And C, he's been that guy for a decade. There's many reasons to favor Bruce.
Because he's been bad for a decade?
He's been bad for a decade. Are you one of those people too?
Listen to me.
One of those people that say that for a decade, or not decade, it was like 8 years, Jay Bruce went 30-90 every year, and that makes him no good?
He's 32 years old. Bruce hit 223, 248, 256, 254, 219, 250, 226, 217, 252, 256. And then he had 281. Yay, 2010. 223, 254. You know what all of those numbers have in common?
Mm-hmm.
They don't match Daniel Polka.
Oh, my God.
That's
not even true.
It's
from 2011 to 2017. So just remove last year because he was hurt. Okay. The seven previous years, Jay Bruce averaged 30 home runs, 94 RBIs, 80 runs. Daniel Polka will never in his career have a single season where he goes 30, 94, 80. He won't, not one. And that's the average effort for Bruce in seven of the last 8 years.
Deteriorating. Polka fell. How many games did Bruce do that in, by the way? How many average games?
That was an average of 150.
150 games. 25 more games than Polka. So you're saying 25 more games, Polka doesn't have three more home runs.
Not going to get 94 RBIs. Not going to score 80 runs.
He might not get that many RBI because he won't have as many. The team kind of sucks. There's no question about that. But he's also that won't cost you where you drafted Bruce. What round did you draft?
I take Bruce the 21st round. What was it? It wasn't like I drafted him early.
Well, I don't know. I don't know where you drafted him.
I think I drafted him in the 21st round. But again, he also qualifies at two positions, and he's not going to lose his job.
19th round, by the way.
19th round. He's not going to lose his job because he's getting paid a salary and they brought him in. Polka, again, could lose his job. Jay Bruce hits 190 the first month. Everyone yells at him and throws tomatoes at him. They keep playing him. Polka does it. He could end up back in the minors. That's the difference, too.
23 rounds is where your starters are at. So Bruce is a starter for Ray. Polka is a clear backup for me. And yet he trashes Daniel Polka, and he loves Jay Bruce like he reinvented the wheel.
Well, 7 months from now, we'll reconvene, Jeff. We'll have a discussion.
And what's gonna happen, right?
Write it down.
They're going to be the exact same play. I would doubt if these two players both hit 239 with 26 home runs and let's call it 70 RBI.
Again, write it down. We'll reconvene at the end of September. And if you're wrong, I'll admit I was wrong. I mean, if you're right, excuse me, I was just assuming what's going to happen. If you're right, I will admit I was wrong.
Right. Okay. You know, in September, I'm going to be balls deep in fantasy football.
I'll remember this then. Yeah, you're right. I'll remember.
Write it down. We take this snapshot July 1st.
So I'm saying it with my chest, Jeff.
I know you are, and I appreciate that very much. But we take the snapshot July 1st. That's one thing.
Okay,
we take.
All right.
Because that's all that matters in fantasy baseball.
Okay.
Let's get into another thing that I was right about and you were wrong about.
Okay.
And that was not yet. The San Diego Padres on this podcast, I believe it was the first or second episode of the new season here at Fantasy Baseball Elite Rate. I told people, hey, bet on the San Diego Padres, 120-1 right now for future odds. And I also said, I think at that time we're talking Machado, which, by the way, these two guys not signing is one of the biggest hypocrisies in the known universe in the sporting world in the last 20 years, in my opinion, but that's a topic for another time. But right now, Ray Flowers, the San Diego Padres are in on Manny Machado, mm-hmm. Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Dallas Keuchel, they've kicked the tires, and Gio Gonzalez. They are in on it now. Who they get, they're not getting all these guys. I doubt they get two of them. But they are legitimate. And the thing is the reason I said that is I saw the what happened last year. Same thing. Eric Hosmer didn't sign long time. And then all of a sudden, secret team. Oh, we done. Eric Hosmer signs in San Diego. And he had a home year. Nobody really cares and all this stuff. Nobody gives the Padres any credit. But Padres have one of the best farm systems in Major League Baseball right now. Mm-hmm. They drafted a couple people. Will Myers is a really good player, one of my favorites year in and year out. I'm pissed I didn't get him in FSTA. Bet you're behind I'm going to get him in my Tout Wars draft and follow league. But he's healthy now. Renfro's there. Margot had sort of a down year. You've got guys like Tatis Jr. And to add to this, they signed a Machado, Harper, either one of those, and maybe get Realmuto. And you're talking about a serious contender in the NL West, right?
Yeah, and we talked to Dennis Lynn of The Athletic on the SiriusXM show, and I was confused by what he said, and I actually asked a follow-up question because I was like, he thinks that of the two guys, Machado or Harper, the team would prefer Harper. And I guess the assumption is there if they bring him in, it's more of a marketing tool. Because if you look at the Padres, they lost what's-his-face. Villanueva is playing in Japan now at third base. They've said Will Myers is going to play in the outfield. They don't have a third baseman. I don't know why in hell they wouldn't rather have Machado, because if you put Will Myers in the outfield, you then have an outfield of Myers, Renfro, Cordero, Margot, Jankowski, and Reyes. Like, why do you need another outfielder? Like, right. They've already got too many outfielders. So if they bring in Harper, let's say, as an example, then they would probably trade pieces they have here in the outfield, I would assume, to try to bolster their starting pitching staff. They could do that, or they could dip into the farm system. And you're right, Jeff. They've got Mejia, Urias, Tatis, Gore. Like, they've got huge talent down in the minor. Huge. So the Padres just have to decide what they're going to do. You know, are they going to go all in? Are they going to ramp this thing up and say, hey, we're going to pay $175 million this year for our payroll, and we're just going to go for it? Are they going to trade these pieces that they've been building around thinking, well, we'll keep these guys cost-controlled and be, competitive for the next 5 years? Very interesting to see, because – like you're saying, we're getting late in the process now. And if they can have a couple of things break their way, could drastically change the face of that organization.
It's one of those deals where both Harper and Machado, you're starting to see the poutiness come out in their PR people and their agents. Like, now they're all pissed off. Like, they're all pissed off. Why am I only getting 175? Why am I only getting this? Well, because that's what your market value is.
Hustle.
Right?
Hustle, how about that?
Yeah, Manny Machado has nobody to blame but himself. And Bryce Harper, stay on the field before last year, and you would have gotten that maybe. But either way, you still get I'm sorry, man. I don't care. I don't care what you think. $200 million. If anybody's willing to invest $200 million in you and your future, they believe in you very, 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 very much. I don't care what you say. It's this BS surrounding – Giancarlo Stanton got 300. Well, Giancarlo Stanton was a necessary piece. I talked about this on the SiriusXM show the other day, Ray, is that Stanton did, and I know you hate Giancarlo Stanton, but it's not just about the player. Stanton provides a valuable service for the Yankees in that he gives Aaron Judge protection. Protection in the lineup means a lot, and it was a necessary piece for them for last year when the market, if Harper was on the market last year, he gets the $300 million. Simple. That's the way it would have gone. So know, to bitch and complain about it doesn't mean anything. Take your $175, $200 million, go wherever you want. All these teams will pay you, and shut the hell up. That's what I say. And San Diego, dude, you know how much – we were talking about this the other day, Ray, just about our personal lives. How much – how great would it be to have $200 million in San Diego for 10 years?
Yeah.
Is there a better place to do it? You get to play baseball in the summer in San Diego, and you have $200 million to do it?
Yeah, and it, you know, it depends what's important to you, what is your deal. Some people love the hustle and bustle of a city and skyscrapers, so, you know, to each his own. But if I could live in San Diego with $200 million, as a 20-year-old, oh my God, oh my gosh, like, come on, man. Yeah. It's like, it's beautiful. The weather's fantastic. The vibe is great. It's the most laid-back place. You could go to the beach. No one's going to bug you. You walk down the street in New York, you got 57 cameramen following you. It's like, come on, man. I don't know why anyone wouldn't want to be there. I mean, they've revitalized the city with the stadium down there. The Gaslight District is great, provided you don't go to a cigar bar when you're down there.
Oh, what a great story.
Oh, my gosh, Jeff, man.
You smoking.
Oh, my gosh, Jeff, man. I would go to San Diego in a heartbeat for that.
And don't forget, no more Chargers. So the whole city rallying behind the Padres. And one of the reasons I think there's some pressure on them to be competitive as well. So we'll monitor that situation. If you had to guess right now, and I'm getting – for those of you who may be new to me and my broadcasting, I'm not going to be this nice and sensible every single day. I've got maybe two more episodes of Fantasy Baseball Elite in me before I start maybe even cursing and shredding these two bastards in Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. I've had enough.
Yeah.
Sign your deal. It's February. Sign your deal or go home forever. Enough of this. This is enough. Like, I don't know what you were expecting. What do you want? What the money that's out there is the money that's out there. It's a ton of money. Is it the most money? Evidently not. Who cares? It's the dumbest thing ever. And I'm about an episode or two away, Ray, from just saying, well, hope you don't fall down the stairs. Because, whoops. I don't know, NBA fans out there, John Wall was at home the other day, walking around, where he slipped on something, up, Achilles, whoosh, gone, Achilles, gone. Whoops, what if you do that? You have $275 million on the table, whoosh, Achilles, uh-oh, now what? Now what are you worth? Oh, guess what? We'll offer you a $5 million prove-it deal after you get back. How about that? Take your damn deal. I'm sick of it, Ray Flowers.
Oh, yeah. You could there's stories. Jeremy Affeldt years ago was, you know, separating frozen hamburgers and stabbed himself with a knife in the kitchen. Like, any of these things can, you know, you go get a tattoo and you get an infection. Like, I mean, any of these things can happen. Yeah. I don't ever bemoan someone for taking the money because I know that there's a tremendous pressure on these guys because if they sign contracts for $200 million, let's say, then the union's going to be all over them because then it's like we're going backwards. And so there is a lot of pressure. But I'm not going to sit here and say that, hey, man, someone offers you $200 million. You're a fool to say no because you're worth 300. At some point, like you're saying, man, you just got to be $200 million.
Take the money.
Send me the check, folks. Whatever you want me to do. If it's $200 million, I'll do it right now.
I'd be on Mission Beach every day. Just scooping it up, man. Just slurping everything. It would be amazing time out there. I really would be.
Gross.
So that gross. How dare you? How dare you make everything sexual? All right. So that's the Padres situation as well. Let's get in. Let's do something fun here, Ray Flowers. And you know,
unlike the first half hour of this, okay? Yeah.
Unlike the first half hour, we're we talk Daniel Polk and
for 10 minutes.
Let's talk first round, and I want to go through a couple of choices with you. And these are choices people are making. National Fantasy Baseball Championship. If you guys are interested in getting in those drafts, the Draft Champions League or the main event or whatever, go to fantasyguru.com, look at the banner on top and click on that and sign up for some of those leagues. Ray Flowers is going to be out there drafting his own teams. Vlad Sedler drafts probably 1,400 of those NFBC teams as well. So check those out. Compete against the best. I will get in an NFBC league this year, as I always do as well. I don't know if I'm going to play multiple this year or not. It kind of depends. But check that out. I want to go through some ADP, and I want to do some either or with you, Ray. I'm going to ask you a question about the first round players, and you tell me which one you prefer. Okay?
Got it.
All right, first one. We talked about it on last episode, but it's been over a week. I was out there in Atlanta, hobnobbing with all the NFL insiders and stars, as I tend to do. And
Sean McVay's wife were hanging out, I heard. Yeah.
Why am I a known scumbag roaming the streets of Atlanta? Why am I running into the coach of the Super Bowl two different times? Why are you around?
Good question, Jeff.
I've been there four or five times, and Belichick's been there. And I've not seen a singular Patriot or Patriot coach or assistant. I haven't seen a ball boy for the Patriots one time. All right. Why am I running into the head coach of the Rams twice? I don't know. It sort of seemed that way. Anyway, Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor. You have to choose one, Ray Flowers, in the first round. Which one are you choosing?
Yeah. No right, no wrong. Very difficult decision.
No, there's right and wrong. There's all right and wrong.
I don't think there is right or wrong, but yeah. I will answer your question, Jeff. I'm just saying, I don't think there's really a right or wrong answer. It really comes down to how you want to build your team. Like, do you think it's shortstop, you know, third, which is weaker, as ones are. I, at this point, would lean slightly toward Lindor because he plays shortstop. That a bit, again, this is about as close as you can get. I don't think there's a wrong answer there. I'll go with Lindor. I think he's a slightly more consistent hitter, and that is something that you brought up repeatedly with Ramirez, especially from your experience in the DFS game. And anyone that had Ramirez last year knows his season was spectacular, but he was a dud down the stretch. I think Lindor is just a slightly better overall hitter. We'll have to see if these guys keep running or not in 2019.
Let me go through something that Ted Schuster brought to both of our attention. And I think Ted's onto something a little bit with these Cleveland Indian hitters. Lindor, Kipnis, Jose Ramirez, Carlos Santana, Jake Bowers, Taylor Naquin, Roberto Perez, Leonis Martin, Greg Allen. That's the projected lineup we're looking at for the Indians.
Yeah.
Why are you pitching to Jose Ramirez or Francisco Lindor? Why? I mean, seriously, for real, why would you go near them? I will hit Santana, especially from the left side, all day, try to beat me. Bowers, Naquin, Perez, Martin, Allen, all day. I ain't touching Lindor or Ramirez. So I worry about this. The same thing that happened to Bryce Harper. We look at Bryce Harper, and you famously always say only 100 RBIs once and all this stuff. But because nobody pitches to him, why would you? And he had serious protection. He had some good protection around him in Washington. I look at Cleveland. There's nobody. I pitch to all these guys. No problemo here, Ray Flowers. So I'm worried about both of these guys.
Yeah, and I think that's legit. And, you know, when I look at the landscape of kind of where free agency is left at the moment, if they're not going to sign a Harper, and there's no indication the Indians would ever do that, they desperately need to add Carlos Gonzalez or Adam Jones. They've got to add someone in the outfield. They've got to do that. And veteran-type guys like Carlos Gonzalez and Adam Jones aren't what they once were, but they're still competent major league hitters. If you go in, you know, because we don't know when Bradley Zimmer's going to be back. We don't know where, you know, his shoulder is. We don't know if his bat's able to keep up with his athleticism at this point. You ran through the names in the outfield. It's dreadful. Like, it's really bad. So if they're not going to work a trade, they need to sign one of those veterans to add something to this offense, because you're totally right. It is a scary lineup at the moment, Jeff.
Very scary. I agree with you, by the way. I would go Lindor over Ramirez. Consistency, I think his speed is more true than Jose Ramirez's. I don't know. Jose Ramirez is not a speed guy. And I don't believe either one of their power is this good either. And I don't know. Just nothing but off-speed pitches all year long for those two guys. Make them earn it. How about these two? And both players, I think, I don't know if I don't speak for you, but both players I like more than Ramirez and Lindor. J.D. Martinez, fifth in ADP right now, according to the NFBC. Nolan Arenado, who's ninth, four spots below J.D., but very similar types of players here. Obviously different positions. Which one do you prefer?
The corner infield spots get thinner quicker than you would think.
First and third.
You end up at that area where, you know, you're looking up in the ninth, tenth round. It's like, ugh, they're all the same. And so you can, you know, keep pace at those positions. Just, you know, you grab a mid-level guy. You take your Carlos Santana or whatever, your Justin Smoke. You're okay, but you don't have much chance of seeing something significant there. And I think that's the case kind of at both corners. So I would naturally tilt more toward the third baseman or the outfielder just in principle. Now, we take it to the next level. I did write that home run article. It's in the Fantasy Guru Draft Guide. And it was really interesting. because the name JD Martinez obviously is all over the list because he hit 40-plus, 43 home runs last year. He had a massive home run to fly ball ratio of nearly 30%. Okay, the odds are extremely good that that number is falling substantially. Okay, guys just don't produce number like that consistently year after year. It doesn't happen. You look at the average distance on your home run, and there's like 60 guys that were over 400 feet last year. JD Martinez was at 398. Like, he wasn't even at 400. He wasn't like one of the top 60 in baseball in terms of distance, which is, to me, you know, again, it's not all about distance, but that's pretty surprising.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Serious question.
Yeah.
How do you measure that over the Green Monster? Because there's no landing spot.
It's all computerized. Yeah. I mean, they're triangulating it. That's fair. I mean, that's a fair. Yeah. So
I'm just saying, I completely agree with you in that metric, but I look at it as like, are we getting a true measure on where that ball would land?
Yeah.
I
don't. I'm assuming that the StatCast data is accurate, and I can't say that it isn't, but it is fair to question, is it? So I'll put it like that.
Okay.
I'll go to the next thing. We talked about Daniel Palka, who led baseball in velocity off the bat and on home runs.
Yes, he did.
Okay. He was at 107.4 miles an hour. Yeah. JD Martinez was like 40th at 102.6.
Garbage.
Garbage. totally garbage. He's no good at all.
Palka.
So, you know, you start looking at these numbers, and it's like, you know, I'm going Nolan Arenado. I think that it's very plausible, in fact, likely, that JD Martinez sees a pullback in home runs. He's much more likely to be 35 than 40-plus. I'm still nervous about his ability to stay on the field 150 games. Let's not forget there was all the back and forth about his foot. And, you know, there's the contract was written in such a way because the Red Sox wanted to protect themselves. Arenado plays 155 games every year. We know that. I'm going Arenado, Jeff. It was my choice.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's fascinating to me that JD is so far ahead. I mean, you say so far. It's four spots. It's not that big a deal.
But I'm very surprised, though, Jeff. I agree with you.
I am, too. And yeah. I pass on JD in favor of Christian Yelich in the FSTA draft just because I wanted to build my team more balanced. And, you know, let the guy behind me, I think it was Rotoballer, Real Talk Raf, draft JD Martinez. Speaking of Christian Yelich, Ray Flowers, how about this one? Because these two are neck and neck in the NFBC, and they went two spots away in the FSTA draft that you and I did, is Christian Yelich and Ronald Acuna. Which one of these do you
pick? Yeah, that's also
– Acuna is – I think he's higher, right? Oh, no, they're neck and neck, seventh and eighth. Actually, when we were planning – I planned this last week. Acuna was the spot – he was a higher than Yelich, and now Yelich is – technically seventh to eighth to Acuna. So these two are very close, 7.14 to 7.97 ADP.
Yeah, I would say in this, you know, we're doing a series in the Fantasy Guru Draft Guide, Battle of the Experts, myself and Vlad Sedler, and we're basically releasing one a day here as we move forward. And I thought it was a perfect example. This is off topic, but I'll get back to why it makes sense here, Jeff. We were talking about Clayton Kershaw, and Vlad was basically saying, I'd rather have Walker Buehler. And my counter-argument was, Walker Buehler, at his best, is what Clayton Kershaw has been at his worst. Okay? I want the known. I know what Clayton Kershaw is. And if the last year was the worst it gets with Clayton Kershaw for now, I'm fine with that. Walker Buehler, we can talk about where he's at. We can talk about talent. His innings pitch totals are no better than the diminished Clayton Kershaw. A lot of the numbers are virtually identical. My point being, I want the known over the unknown. I say that because in my head, we have Ronald Acuna, who hasn't even played 130 games at a big league level in a season, versus Christian Yelich, who has been around forever. He's been the same guy forever. Everything came together last year for him. And I've been predicting for about 4 years, everyone that follows my work, you know, from place to place that we've been, Jeff knows that, draft Yelich. And eventually it all came together last year. It's likely that we see a pullback with Yelich, especially in that home run column. I think that's certainly going to happen. But I just look at the body of his work, Jeff, the stability of his offense and ballpark, and I'm going to take him slightly over Acuna, who may be a better quote-unquote talent, but I still got to see it.
I agree. I was happy with Yelich. I have liked this kid as well. This is one of those guys that – and I got a lot of grief for the Yelich pick, and I think I had the 10th pick of FSTA And oh, the home run to fly ball ratio is just never going to stand. But here's the deal, though, everybody, is that for the first 3 years of his career, the biggest knock on Christian Yelich was that all he did is hit ground balls. All he did. I mean, it's really – he could not get elevation for whatever. Hit the ball hard, made good contact, good knowledge of the strike zone. He turned it on. And I don't think it's going to go drop as harsh as so many people think. Now, whether he gets 36 home runs or 28, whatever. I got Daniel Polk. I don't need anything. I didn't need any home runs. Okay, he hits 26 home runs maybe. Okay, now I'll take that, but he's going to hit 300. Going to be right around that. He's going to steal 20 bases. And the skill set is just so high and so sustainable that I prefer him over Ronald Acuña too. And like you said, Ronald Acuña may indeed have a better future or better present even than Yelich. Who knows? Maybe he's the NL MVP this year. We don't know. But a lot of these first-round choices that Ray and I make, and all of you should be making, it's about as much what upside that they have as what's their downside. You really have to draft against the floor. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Draft against their floor. What's the worst case scenario? Okay, this is what you got, and move on from there. Don't get in when you start drafting with, oh, this guy is a 30-plus home run hitter. This guy's a 30 stolen base guy. This guy's a 300 hitter. This guy's 100 RBI. Man, you start hitting those kind of numbers and expectations, all it's going to be is disappointment. That's all you're going to see. And you start drafting a team of 10, 12, 13, 15 players that you're drafting based on their upside projections, and then reality hits, and even if they have solid years and solid returns, you're so much further behind than you ever would have thought.
And one other thing, too, it's perspective. And I'm one of the player profile series in the Fantasy Guru Draft Guide. I was looking at Luis Castillo, who's going to be out this week. And, you know, there's the perception that he was atrocious last year because the expectations were very high. And overall, the numbers weren't great. Okay? They weren't. He was pretty good in the second half. Mm. He was the guy in the second half that we thought he would be all season long. Now, the assumption, and I've seen this written in other places, oh, he improved as the season went on, so that means better things for 2019. We're doing the same thing with Acuña. We are assuming that he's, you know, because let's look at his breakdown quickly for the halves here. And again, half breaks, you know, mid-season, first season, second half. I don't necessarily think that means much because there's no difference between July 5th and July 25th. So it's the same thing. Right. But in the first half last year, he had a 740 OPS. In the second half, it was 1,030. That's a massive difference. Massive difference. Now, if this was reversed, if he had the 1,000 in the first half and the 740 in the second half, everyone would be panicked. But because he's a young guy with the pedigree, we're all taking the second half as if, oh, he figured it out. Oh, he made that swing change. Oh, he changed his approach. So therefore, he's got to be a 1,000 OPS guy moving forward. That's dangerous, Jeff. That's a perception thing, I think, as much as maybe reality in this case.
I don't disagree. I agree 100%, as a matter of fact. And by the way, I was just checking now, Luis Castillo. Whose team is he on in the FSTA?
Oh, I got to go change that right up.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you got to not like it because he's one of my guys. But yeah, man, I agree. And I, like you, don't take the first half, second half into a huge element. And I think one thing people do, another thing, a pitfall for people, is they think, well, whatever that they did in the second half, they figured something out.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen. And it's like, oh, boy, I don't know about that. And especially with young players like you're talking about with Acuña, we don't know if that has to do. They're over the track record, there's certain players they can't hit in April and September. When the weather's cooler, they can't do it. In the hot months, they hit very well, and vice versa as well. We have track record of some players like that. But with young players like Castillo, like Ronald Acuña, we don't know what the trend is yet. And I'm trying to think of the player I was talking about last year. And was it Rafael Devers? I don't remember. Is everybody out of their mind? And a couple of years ago, I remember it was Ruzny Castillo, because I remember when everyone was on that train. Yep. And I go, this guy will be in the minor leagues. Like, he's not even going to be in the major league. I can't remember who it was. But I said, I wouldn't doubt if that player got sent down. Like Acuña could be surprising, but if he starts out ice cold and really bad, it's completely possible that he goes to Gwinnett and tries to figure it out for a month. Like, it's, I'm not saying it's likely, but it's a possibility, which is a big difference over players who have contracts and done it for 5 years and that have no chance. They're not going to get optioned back down. You know what I mean?
Right.
It might have been even Castillo. I can't remember, but either way. So Acuna, Yelich, Arenado, Martinez, Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, who would you guys prefer in the first round? Hit us up at baseballguys, at Jeff_Manns on Twitter. I want to get to this other article, Ray, that you wrote, part of the draft guide for 2019 over Fantasy Guru, and that's who to target. Some players just to target. And the way I want to go about this is, you know, there are players I talked about in the SiriusXM show, ironically today, which is we're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon, everybody, just so you guys are aware. And I talked about players that have been first round picks or early second round picks for last couple of years. And suddenly they're just gone. Like, they're now nobody's interested in them. They keep slipping and falling and not literally, but they, you know, they keep going by the wayside. And let's, I want to start out with Chris Bryant. Okay. Mm-hmm. This was a pick. You took him in the FST league. You got him in the third round. And Chris Bryant, 2 years ago, last year, people were, it was like, you know, the old Toys R Us on Black Friday. Like, people were smashing others in the face of the brick, trying to get Chris Bryant on their team, trying to be part of the Chris Bryant business. Now, after a down season, which he was injured, and the shoulder was all messed up and things like that, nobody seems to even want to take a chance on him in the second round for whatever reason, Ray. Are you targeting Chris Bryant? Are you worried about the shoulder? What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm totally targeting Chris Bryant. And, you know, it's remarkable to me. I'm not even surprised. It goes way beyond that. I'm stupefied as to
–
stupefied. Ooh, yeah. Oh. Nice. I'm stupefied as to how it's possible that a guy who was Rookie of the Year, a guy who followed that up with an MVP award, a guy who then was seventh in MVP voting. So in 3 years, this guy's been top 11 in MVP voting every year heading into last season. He gets hurt as a down season. Everyone's out.
Everybody's out.
It makes no sense. None. Yeah. None. Was his shoulder jacked? Yeah. Did he get it fixed? Yeah. Is he okay? They say, and maybe he's not. Maybe he'll never be the same player again. I don't know. Okay, maybe. But I think what has happened here is people, again, this goes back to the, he had 39 home runs and then he followed up with 29, so he sucks. It's like, people don't, you know, it's like, no, that's not how that worked. His OPS in that season where he had 10 fewer home runs was actually better than the season he hit 39 home runs. Mm-hmm. You know, his overall game was the same. His overall game is there. Even last season with the struggles, the on-base percentage compared to the batting average was the same gap as we've normally seen. You can certainly write off some of the loss of power to the shoulder. He is a tremendous player. He's 27 years old. He qualifies at two positions. He is an excellent third-round pick.
What about second-round pick?
Depends on your format, but I would say that, for me, I don't have a problem doing it. I don't think you have to. This goes back to what we talk about all the time. It's like, where, how is the universe viewing this player? His ADP right now is 35.2 at the NFBC. You know, so, you know, you don't have to take him in the second round. I mean, you're still jumping things if you're taking him early in the third round. So I think he's excellent in the third round, but if you wanted to take him in the second round and you say, hey, Ray, I'm going to take him over, you know, Whit Merrifield. I'm going to take him over Blake Snell. I'm going to take him over, you know, Garrett Cole. Eh, okay, I don't have a problem with that.
Fair enough. What about Carlos Correa? And this is another player that is – it's unbelievable how far Correa has fallen off in people's minds. And I think a lot of this has to do with – I mean, with Bryant and Correa, you're talking about two players that won World Series. Mm-hmm. And then they came back and they followed up. And, you know, not as good as follow-up performances, obviously. But Correa's batting average went crashing down to earth last year. Injuries, you know, had something to say about that. Guy's, what, 24 years old, right? Just turned 24. Shortstop eligible, you know, 6'4", 220 guy. There's power in that bat. He's, you know, what are your thoughts on Carlos Correa?
Yeah, I think I drafted in the FST last year. I'm not looking at it. I think I drafted Bryant and Correa in my first two rounds, if I'm not mistaken. I did in some draft last year. And in that FSTA draft, I ended up with, Bryant in the third round. I was two picks away from getting Correa in the fourth round. I don't know if you would have taken him or not, Jeff, but I was set to grab him. Because I was going to get, Bryant Correa and do great things. I am a huge fan of Correa. Huge fan. I love his game. You watch it, it speaks, it says stardom. Like, you just watch him, the way he carries himself, mm-hmm. his motions on the field, his mechanics, it's all there. Can he stay healthy? We have to see. We got a couple years now where he didn't play 115 games. You had the back issue. That's always worrisome. His performance last year tanked relative to the expectations. So there's, for me, a bigger question mark with Correa because of everything I just brought out. But if he is healthy, I see no reason to think he doesn't get back to at least the levels of 2016. And I think the guy that we saw in 2017 is who he can be.
Have we seen the best Correa has? I mean, have we seen his best is what I'm saying. I mean, here's what I think. I think drafters – are looking at it and his year of 2017, where 24, 84, 82 mm-hmm. with a .315 average, .391 on base percentage, by the way, which he had a 100 point swing. He had .239 last year, the .323. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
A 90 point swing. I love that from a young player, especially. People are thinking that his age 22 season will be his best ever. Now, Bryce Harper, that may be true. But I don't see that. I think there's a lot more with Carlos Correa. I think he's got better years, multiple years, than he had in age 22 season. That may start in 2019. So I'm scooping him up mm-hmm. as well. Another player I want to talk about is a guy you actually did a player profile, part of your player profile series in the draft guide of fantasyguru.com. Can you guys tell? Just go to fantasyguru.com. For crying out loud. Like, I hate having to say where the stuff is. Just there. FantasyGuru.com. That's where you go. Gary Sanchez.
Yeah.
Remember last year? My God, the amount of conversations I had to sit there, glassy-eyed, pretending, it's going to change the way the football game is going, or the baseball played. Gary Sanchez is changing the catcher position and how it's played forever. No one. Everyone's going to do
That's pretty good.
I'd sit there and listen to how Gary Sanchez was going to hit 4,000 home runs, and there's nothing that any human being could ever do about it. And he didn't hit 200. He didn't sniff 200 batting average last mm-hmm. year. 18 home runs, solid, 53 RBI for a catcher in 83 games or 89 games. Pretty decent. But it's amazing. To go from this guy was a second / third round pick a year ago mm-hmm. to falling all the way down. I didn't even see. He is now he's still a second catcher, I guess, but 58.38, a lot further. It's a pretty big drop for Sanchez.
Yeah. And, this started out in his rookie season. We were on SiriusXM because we weren't doing this podcast yet. And I kept saying, 40% home run to fly ball ratio. Ha, 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 ha. And I wrote, there's less than a 0% chance, which, of course, is impossible. But I wrote that. I actually quoted it in the player profile saying that, no chance that's going to happen. And the number dropped. It was cutting 50%. And then it was, hey, folks, this guy's not a .285 hitter. Yes, he is. And then that number dropped. So this has been really strange. I have never seen nor written nor agreed with that point of view that you brought out. And you know that. I've always been on the other side of this. It's obvious that he's not Mike Piazza, so let's stop. Let's move on from that. There's a couple things going on here. One, he hits the ball hard. There's no debating that. He hits the ball very hard. He is slower than I am, okay? He is so slow. When he hit the ball in the infield last year, Jeff, he went 2 for 118.
Huh. Wow.
So he hit 17. Not 170, he hit 17 on balls hit in the infield. He's slow, so he can't help himself out at all on the ground. He pulls everything, which is great for home runs. It's terrible for batting average. It's terrible for helping you get on base, right? So he's basically trying to jack everything. When the home run to fly ball ratio supports him, he hits home runs. When it doesn't, he pops out and makes outs. Like, it's, this is not – sometimes analysis, we get way too carried away. It's not that complicated sometimes. You know, it's just not. If you hit the ball in the air, you're not going to get base hits. If you pull everything and don't use the field, pitchers are going to make you hit their pitch. You're going to roll over things. You're going to, you know, ground balls to shortstop if you're a left, a right-handed batter like he does. And you get thrown out first base because you're slow. Like, it's not – so I think the case of Sanchez is everyone expected too much. He's not going to consistently hit 35 home runs. He's not going to consistently hit 285. The thing that saves him is the fact that the catcher position is so weak. Like, you can look at him and Mike Zunino and say, and some people say, well, they're basically the same guy. No, they're not. He is a better hitter than Mike Zunino. He's got a legitimate chance to be hit, you know, 250 this year with 30 home runs. But there are holes to his game, and last year was a big-time concern for those people. Punch the face, if you will, to those people that thought he was going to be a superstar, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm actually surprised that fifth – it's, see, I don't know where he went in our FSTA draft, but it seems like he's just falling way further than I thought. But
it fell to the sixth round in that, Jeff, so way behind where his ADP is.
Okay, so fair enough. And that's a 14-teamer, the FSTA league. So, yeah, the FSTA was down on Gary Sanchez significantly, whereas he was a second-round pick in that league 1 year ago. One other player, and we'll go to another Astros, George Springer, Ray Flowers. This is another player that was a second-round pick a year ago. First round pick in some league if you're in 15 teamer, but and now he's fallen. His ADP 60.28 in the NFBC. And if you're noticing with Correa and now with George Springer and even Altuve, who we talked about on our last episode of Fantasy Baseball Elite, people are underestimating some of these Astro bats.
Oddly, right? You wouldn't think so. I think we got a situation with Springer who's 29. I mean, it took him a long time to get to the big leagues. Astros held him down and all that. So he's actually 29, so he's a little older than you think. The problem that I see with so many of these guys, including Springer, is the expectations. When you look at Springer's performance in the minor leagues, he was, you know, he went 40-40 one year, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this guy, he was, you know, routinely stealing 25-30 bases. He's gotten to the big leagues. He's stolen 41 bases in 5 years. He's stopped running.
While hitting leadoff.
Yeah.
A lot of that time.
Yeah, and he's been caught 27 times. So it's not like, you know, he's been awful. He's been bad. He has actually hurt the Astros more than he's helped them trying to steal bases. So he's been bad at it. Again, he went 40-40 in the minors. So he's lost some of the luster people had for him because of that. And I think it's also people get tired of good. I think he's kind of the new Justin Upton. You know, he's a guy that you look at the end of the year and it's like, those are good numbers. They're not superstar. He's not hitting 320. He's not hitting 40 home runs, but he's just good. You were talking about on-base percentage. Look at his on-base percentage numbers.
Yeah, 340.
They're the same every year. Yeah, look at his walk-to-strikeout ratio. Same every year. You know, look at – I mean, he's the same guy every year. So there's a lot of stability with him, Jeff, but the lack of running and 2 years in a row maybe with some injuries – souring some people.
The run, you know, the stolen base ability, and that's another advantage you could take advantage. That's why we're talking about here players to target, because these are guys that are getting devalued, I guess, when it comes to drafts right now based on one problem they had. Either it's health like Chris Bryant or a down season at age 23 like Carlos Correa, just an overvalue of the market like Gary Sanchez or George Springer that just kind of lost his speed. And it's not just lost. He's not stealing money bases anymore. So what? 25 home runs, 80 RBIs, over 100 runs each of the last 3 years while getting on base at a minimum of a like 350 clip? Get out of here. Like 280 hitter, dude, I'm all about it. And a player at the top of a lineup where you start looking at the Astros and how much they relied on that pitching staff last year, because their hitters, Altuve was down, Correa was down, Springer was down. Bregman came of age and produced pretty decently, but there's a lot more in this lineup for the Houston Astros than originally thought, you know what I mean, or that they showed last year at least. There's a lot more upside to go, and it's why they're going to be a contender once again in the AL West. Another player, and this guy made the article – over at fantasyguru.com, right? Chris Taylor. Remember last year, Chris Taylor? Man, everyone had to get him. It was 2020. He's stealing bases. It was all about loft in the swing and all that good stuff. And now it completely fell apart, and it's another player that fell from 17 steals down to 9, I believe, in 2018. What are your thoughts on Chris Taylor, the Dodgers?
Who drafted Chris Taylor in the FSTA?
I did.
Yeah, so I don't hate all your guys.
Yeah, of
just
course.
Your bad picks.
You hate
And
it's amazing. It's the only guy that made my
list. Yeah. Just to clarify, too, when we're talking about this article, and I gave a disclaimer in the article, who should you target? These are not players that I'm saying are going to win the MVP, okay? These are not guys that I'm saying are going to be superstars. These are players that basically are being undervalued, okay? These are guys that at their current cost are good additions, and I think that Chris Taylor falls into that category. He has the speed to be a 15-steal guy. He did it once. He didn't do it last year, as you noted, but he certainly has the speed to be a 15-steal guy. So that's beyond doubt. It's there. He's averaged 20 home runs, 65 RBIs, 85 runs the last 2 years. Doesn't sound great. And quite frankly, it's not fantastic. But 2 years in a row with 85 runs scored, people overlook the runs category. They always have. I don't really know why, but they always do. 85 runs scored in multiple seasons is a pretty good mark, even in today's day and age. And don't overlook a really important piece here.
Position.
Yeah. As an outfielder, he's kind of just a guy. He qualifies at shortstop. As a shortstop, maybe you don't want him there. You want him as your middle infielder, ideally. Great. You can draft him at a point where his ADP is now. You can plug him in to your middle infield spot. You've got the flexibility to flash him out to the outfield if there's an injury or something, and we all know the guys are going to get hurt. So I think he's undervalued because people have short memories. People have forgotten 2017. They now think he's a 250 hitter. I think the biggest concern I have for him at the moment is playing time because the Dodgers are moving pieces and adding guys all the time and all that. But I think that Chris Taylor represents a nice option to buy given his cost.
Yeah, and then the other part about it with the article and everything is we are going to – we said this in the earlier episode. If you guys just found us, appreciate you and get the word out. Tell a friend, whatever you have to do. Leave us a rating, things you like and don't like. We have questions we're going to get to here in a minute via Twitter at baseballguys, @Jeff_Mans. So we're going to get to some questions, but something people are asking – I'm tired of hearing about first round. Mm-hmm. Tired of hearing. Well, trust it. It's early February right now. We do this with all of our sports, and Ray Flowers and I are as experienced as any fantasy analyst in the business. Trust us when we tell you, you want to concentrate right now, as we are, on these first round selections. Second round, we're sort of gravitating. That's why we did Trout and Betts, and we're moving along. Because you got to hone in. You got – before you think you know the first round and then you go and draft, you know, like earlier we said Chris Bryant. And I said, Ray, well, we're drafting the second. And I thought Ray gave the experienced fantasy baseball minds response, I don't have to. And that's exactly right. And that's what we're talking about a lot. So we are talking a lot of the first and second round players lately. Trust us. By the time we get to end of February, we're going to be talking about all kinds of players you probably never heard of in your life. All right. You want to talk about Lewis Brinson. You want to talk about Charlie Culberson, whatever. We will have that.
We're not that deep. Whoa. Okay.
Mikey Matuk. How about that guy?
Yeah, nice.
Where is he? Detroit still? Where is he?
Yeah. I think he is.
He was in Tampa, then in Detroit last year. So we're going to get there. All right. So I know a lot of questions about that. But if you guys hit us up on Twitter when we post these, when we're recording, more than happy answer your questions to that end as well. So that's where we're at there. One other player I want to talk about before we get to those questions, Ray, and that's Robinson Cano. Now with the Metropolitans, 124.19. This is a guy who was a perennial first-round pick. I think he was your first-round pick for half of a decade, it seemed, between – Yankee days and early Mariner days, Robbie Cano. He has fallen off the face of the earth. Anything left in that bat of Robbie Cano's?
Well, it's really interesting. Yes, there is. I don't really know where this got started. If it's a PED thing, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, if that's your deal, then okay, I understand that. If we're talking about performance quickly, because I know we're doing this and it's tough and I don't want to overwhelm people with numbers. But his batting average last year was 1 point off his career average. Okay. His on-base percentage was 19 points better than his career average. His OPS was 3 points below his career OPS. Robinson Cano's 2018, if you judge it by the slash line, batting average on base, same guy. Same exact guys he's always been. The one negative is he doesn't have the power that he used to. That's fair. But how many second basemen are routinely hitting 22 home runs? It's not that many. So he is someone, again, he is someone that at that cost, if he's sliding, he's not sexy, he's not exciting anymore. But Jeff, you know, give him 150 games last year, the guy hits 300 with 20 home runs. Like, there's still a lot to see in that bat of his if he stays on the field.
If not for the suspension, you're right. His target, it would have been 20 home runs, 300 average, 370 on base percentage, 90-plus RBI, 80-plus runs scored.
It's not that far off.
So it's not that far off. He is 36 years old. He is with a new team, but he's back in New York too, which is good. And here's the thing, the other aspect of this. And I will take a bow because I was right. When he left Yankee Stadium, his power sunk into oblivion outside of 1 year in 2016 where he hit 39 bombs. 14, 21, 23, 10. I mean, that's what he really was, if not for the new Yankee Stadium influx. So he was 14, 15, 19, 14 before in old Yankee Stadium. Then 25, 29, 28, 33, 27. Okay. So lefty in Yankee Stadium, yeah, that's the reason for Cano. I think the Robbie Cano element speaks to a wider issue and something we talked about with the first round is that second base, unlike first base and third base, second base is relatively deep.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, you got Daniel Murphy in Colorado, Kleyber Torres, everybody loves, Albies people love Merrifield, Baez, and Altuve are at the top. But you got D. Gordon, he's a 30 stolen base guy if you're looking for that. You got Robbie Cano down there. You got Brian Dozier, who's a 2020 threat every year. Yoan Moncada, who's an afterthought these days, but it's still a 2020 possibility. You know what I mean? Scooter Jeanette's together back-to-back really good years. Cesar Hernandez, a big impact at the batting average. Jonathan Scope, who's a power threat at second base. I mean, this is a deep position that you don't really need to address
early. You don't have to. You can wait at that one. Correct. Yeah. I agree.
So just put that for what it's worth. All right. I want to do some over-unders with Ray Flowers before we get everybody out of here. Ray Flowers, Cleveland Indians. 84.5 wins in 2019.
Really good pitching staff, and that's going to have to be their saving grace because we talked earlier in the show.
If they don't trade Kluber, though, right?
If they don't trade Kluber, if they don't trade Carrasco and Bauer, who seem unlikely to go, Clevinger is a four. If they can get Bieber up to speed or Danny Salazar to contribute something, it's a really good pitching staff for that starting rotation. But I'm going to say under, Jeff. That's too big a number for them with the way the roster is.
I agree with the under. The thing with the AL Central is what happened. Are the White Sox, Tigers, and Twins going to be competitive? And anyone jump up? Who the hell knows? But the Indians could just walk away with the division again like they did last year. But if they don't, if any one of those teams jump up and the Indians go back to the middle, it's going to be selling off Carrasco and Kluber. And they're going to start the rebuild process there as well. So, I think the better bet is the under on 84.5 wins for the Tribe. How about the Brewers at 87.5 wins, Ray Flowers?
That's a difficult one. That's a team that I like the talent they have on their pitching staff. I'm not in love with it. I like it. I think if it gels, we could have a good thing going here. But, you know, Zach Davies is kind of a fifth starter. Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff have to take that next step. Can Freddie Peralta stay in the rotation? Is he better in the bullpen? Can Jimmy Nelson come back from the shoulder? There's so many questions. Kind of the opposite of the Indians, Jeff. They have all these questions with their staff, and you look at their offense, it's like, wow, that offense really come together. You get Orlando Arcia, you know, back to the realm of something positive offensively. You get some help from Ryan Braun. I'll say under, but really close.
Under 87.5. And I think these are two good questions. Because, A, both division winners a year ago, both had 90-plus wins in the Indians and the Brewers. Both in divisions, though, where things are getting more competitive. And we saw the additions the Reds made, who were the bottom feeders last year. The Cubs with Bryant going to be healthier. Can Yu Darvish be this bad again? We shall see. Cardinals go out and get Goldie, Paul Goldschmidt. Pirates always a threat with some good talent there. So it's going to be tough to match the 96 wins the Brewers had a year ago. So 87.5, I kind of like the under on that as well, even though I think they will be competitors all the way through. How about this? Francisco Mejia, we talked Padres earlier, Ray Flowers, 95.5 games played for Mejia.
It's time for him to get the opportunity. He's 23. He's been one of the better prospects in baseball as a catcher. They've got Austin Hedges there with the Padres. Austin Hedges, you know, he's got a lot of power with the bat. His game, though, is more about defense. He's a very good defensive catcher. He is clearly ahead of Mejia. Most teams prioritize defense when you're talking catcher, especially a team like this. It's going to try to bring along some arms on the pitching staff. So I don't know where he fits. We talked earlier in the podcast about all the options they have in the outfield. Maybe they could try him at third base and do something crazy there. But with the way this team is currently set up, Jeff, I'm going to take the under on that at the moment.
How about Milwaukee Brewers? First baseman Jesus Aguiar, 28.5 home runs. Ray Flowers, what do you see from Aguiar?
I'll go over, but it'll be close. And, you know, he had 35 last year, and he had a little bit of an elevated home run to fly ball ratio. I don't think it's crazy to think he repeats it. It was right around where it was the year before. He's a huge dude. He actually doesn't strike out that much for a guy that displays this kind of game. I'll say just over, but not to the level we saw last year.
Brian Dozier, we talked about him here. Let's do this. It's for Brian Dozier, going with his current ADP in the NFBC right now, I'm going to say, what about the 11.5, his ranking on overall second baseman? You think he gets better than that? Or less than that?
Better than that. Yeah, I would say definitely better than that. And we'll see how it plays out. But for me, it's better than that. I think that he is one of the – he's a great target this year given his current ADP. He was basically a top three second baseman the previous 4 years before last season. You know, continually, like you mentioned earlier, continually hitting 25, 30 home runs, continually stealing 50 bases, always right around the century mark in the run scorer department, always playing. Even last year when he was hurt, he was on the field all the time. He'll be better than that.
Final over-under here, Ray Flowers. Tommy Pham, 20.5 home runs.
Over. I think Tommy Pham, who's on my team in the FSTA League, oh, I think that he's low 20s. No, I think he's low 20s. I'm not saying he's going to hit 35 home runs. He's got to stay on the field. And that's a concern. There's always a concern about his eyesight long-term, but there's concerns with muscle pulls and lower body stuff all the time with him. If he's on the field, he goes over 20 home runs. And if he's healthy, he goes 20-20.
One of the teams I'm most interested in this year, Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in what happens. They have a hell of a – they have a lot of sort of raw talent and a lot of options and a pretty deep 25-man if you sit there and look at it. Be interested to see what happens there. All right. Before we get out of here, at Baseball Guys, at Jeff_Mans on Twitter, we asked you guys – for some questions that you have for us. Our guy, C.A. Polk, wants to know, Ray, seems like so much time spent on discussing first early round picks. He's curious about mid to late round picks. Understanding snake drafts is a fluid thing. Obviously, we could just start picking off names and things like that. Right. But the best question, the best part of C.A. Polk's question is, what do you focus on for the mid to late round picks?
Yeah.
And you're looking at NFBC format.
Yeah, you said it earlier. You kind of got to hunt out what your need is. It doesn't do you any good to keep picking speed guys. You don't need to take Roman Quinn if you've already got D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton.
Roman Quinn. Oh, great outdoors. We talked about it.
Yeah, there you go, Jeff, for you. So I think you have to be smart about finding the fit. I also think that when you're talking about the NFBC in particular, the way that league usually plays out, any guys that get called up that don't get drafted are going to go for $1 gazillion in FAB. So you might consider being aggressive with some youngsters that have a high likelihood of being up early in the season. Of course, that leaves you open to having a guy take a roster spot for 2 months because they may not be up till June or even July. But I think it's good to be a little more proactive and take some risks in those reserve rounds in particular on talent. Don't worry so much about the role necessarily. Target the talent first.
I like that approach. And Ray has been doing that for a long, long time. He's had great success with it. My thoughts on mid to late round selections is this. Build your team. You know, have an idea going into the draft. Build your team based on that plan and then fill in those gaps in the middle or later rounds. And that's why I was so passionate about Daniel Palka, who I really don't like very much, but I don't, you know, what Ray Flowers doesn't understand is how big of an impact it was getting that kind of bat for my particular team. Was it the best player there? Was it the, is it, you know, over 162 games and, you know, all 13 other teams' roster? Was that the right pick? No, but for my purposes, it was a great play. And don't overlook teams. One thing I've noticed in this FSDA draft and in others, listen, I'm a White Sox fan, but I try to stay away from them. They're throwing me Yonder Alonso, Daniel Palka, Tim Anderson. Like, come on, man. You can't just throw. Look at team. We're getting prospects and bench players from Yankees and Red Sox and everything else going 10 rounds ahead of middle-of-the-order bats in other places. Don't be afraid of the Tigers, the White Sox, the Rays, who I just talked about. I think is they're loaded with talent. Even the Rangers, for instance, there are some good players on these teams that are just not getting any kind of
playing time. Playing time matters a lot.
Playing time means just about everything, right? I mean, it just does. The Josh Bells of the world, Corey Dickerson. So that's what I'd look for there. Other questions that they had. This one to me, look at that. Somebody likes me, Ray. Jeff, since we're very aware of your love for stacking in daily seasonal fantasy football. Oh, boy. That football's different. I would be interested to hear your take on stacking hitters, pitchers in seasonal baseball. Intentionally drafted three bats and three arms from New York Yankees. Proudest Monkey is asking us that. Ray, you responded to this saying six Yankees too many, even though there's 3-3 pitchers and hitters.
Yeah, you never know how things are going to go, and it doesn't make sense, but sometimes teams end up being elevated as a group. Sometimes they end up going in the tank as a group. I don't know, psychology, whatever it is. I don't ever go into a draft and say to myself, I'm not going to take this guy because I already have a player from that team. But when you're talking six guys out of your 30 or 28 or whatever it is, that's really heavily invested, Jeff. It could work out totally fine. You know, you never know. But that, to me, is too much. Do you worry about that as you're putting a team together?
I do worry about that. There's only so much. And one of the things, you and I had a very interesting off-air conversation the other day about projections and salaries and things like that. One of the things I use for betting, and we have in our betting package over at GuruElite.com for MLB. It's not out yet. So don't start yelling at me. We have not done our preseason MLB futures package yet, but that should be coming out in the next couple of weeks. And what we're working on behind the scenes is I take a lot of different projection models and systems, and I don't do my own necessarily, okay? But I take others, you know, Fangraphs, all different places that you could imagine, and I plug them in, and I love looking at it because – you'll see who does a good job projecting and who doesn't. There are some, they'll say, oh, this team's going to hit 480 home runs this year. It's like, wait, what? You know what I mean? It's, oh, boy, wow, that's a lot of home runs. So I like to see that. But if they're projecting for, you know, if they're a reliable source and they're projecting for a lot of runs scored and things like that, that means they do have good potential to oversee, and then you correlate that to their number. So that's just an aside. But stacking – so – I am willing to invest in three hitters from a team like that. Coors Field, I'll invest in three guys like that. Three pitchers from the Indians or Padres, pitcher parks. Yeah, I could invest in that. I don't want to stack. I want to diversify a little bit, but I am definitely more of a stacker than Ray, and I don't mind using a couple players, especially once we see value. I mentioned Tigers, White Sox. Like if I get a couple of their middle of the order bats, I'm going to take it. Guys with a lot of playing time, and they don't cost me a lot. Am I going to draft back-to-back Yankees in the first, third, and fifth rounds? No. I'm not going to invest that high on one club necessarily. But in daily fantasy baseball, mini stacks, I do it all the time. Two hitters next to each other in the lineup. 2-3 hitters, 3-4 hitters, 1-2 hitters. 5-6 in the lineup, guys like that. I do it all the time. I'll talk a lot about that in our draft guide over at fantasyguru.com leading up to the season, and then at guruelite.com, start of the season for our daily fantasy baseball package there as well. Quick Trey Flowers, Ozzie Albies, or Gleyber Torres? Which one you got?
I think both guys could be overdrafted depending upon where they're taken at a draft. I would slightly lean toward Albies for the speed component.
I don't believe in Albies' power.
I don't either.
Lot of left-handed power last year, so that's one of the things. Does Torres, is he eligible at short second? If that's the case, give me Torres in that deal. Brewers bullpen, Cardinals rotation playing out this year. Brad Pear asked that. Ray already responded, didn't get to you today.
Oh, I didn't know you were coming up with it.
I know. Look at that.
Look at you.
Yeah, I love the people. We're all about the people. Last question from Brad Pear. Brewers bullpen, Cardinals rotation. Again, this is a longer form question, but Ray, do you have concerns?
The Brewers bullpen, I have concerns. Everyone seems to be thinking Corey Knebel's got the job. Jeremy Jeffress was really good last year. He struggled late in the year in the playoffs. I get it.
I'm a Jeffress guy.
I'm a Jeffress guy, too, given the cost right now. I think that he's got a better chance. Hader, I don't think, works the ninth inning other than
can like Hader last year. Repeat? Is he Andrew Miller? Is that?
Yeah, I think he is.
He really is. And
I think he really
sustain.
Is. Can he repeat last year? Again, that bar is – that's 100%. Like, you know – can he pull back and be Andrew Miller? Yeah. Is he one of the top five lefty setup men in baseball? Absolutely. I think he is. Can he be a 100 strikeout guy, which is probably the most important part from a reliever? So you can compare him with a Miles Mikolas or something like that. Yeah, I think he can be. He's basically the new Dellin Betances. And as we all aware, if you've ever owned him, that's great. I think that Jeffress is the guy I'm leaning at the moment. The Cardinals rotation, God knows what the Cardinals are going to do. I don't think the Cardinals know what they're going to do. I mean, every guy on their team apparently throws 97 miles an hour. Like, I don't know how they seem to work this out. Martinez should rebound. Mikolas should basically be the same guy again. Flaherty was tremendous last year. I would expect him to continue to be that guy. Waka, you can't trust for 140 innings. Adam Wainwright, Yeah. Gomber, Gant, and Reyes. That's the key. Probably Reyes being the biggest one. Does he relieve?
Yeah, does he go in the bullpen or the start?
Yeah, how many innings do they allow him to throw? They have the makings there of a really impressive staff, but a lot of things have got to go right from where we're at right now.
Yeah, Martinez, I'm good with. Even Mikolas, and I rode him in Daily Fantasy last year. I just rode it because he's always cheap, never sensational strikeouts, but just always very, very solid start after start at a value price. So, but him doing it again scares me. Waka and Wainwright, forget that.
Yeah, right.
I ain't playing with any of that. By the way, Josh Hader, when I hear the name Hader, I come up with Andrew Miller, and I come up with Willie Hernandez, 84 Tigers.
Yeah. Like,
these are guys that I just don't think that what is it's the most valuable thing you can do. When you have a Josh Hader or Miller, it's impossibly valuable to your starting rotation and to your bullpen. It's just so huge to have that arm, but I don't think that's a repeatable thing. I don't think you can do it. I know Miller done it a couple of years, and Hernandez only had that one great year. You just don't see it a ton. And it makes me very, very nervous anticipating, oh, you're going to get a guy to throw 100 innings out of the bullpen and come in all these key situations and produce at the level. I have a tough time with it. I hope it happens. I hope. But
yeah,
I haven't seen it in my 40 years on it.
Again, yeah, I agree with you. When I say is he that guy, yes, he's that guy. But you shouldn't be expecting 140 strikeouts. You know, you shouldn't be expecting him to throw 80-plus innings. You shouldn't expect him to you know, basically not allow a hit for 3 months. I mean, there's got to be some pullback there. But can he be a guy that's giving you 100-plus strikeouts with a 2.2 ERA and a 1 whip? Absolutely can be that guy, Jeff.
All right, that's fair enough. All right, there you guys go. Another episode of Fantasy Baseball Elite in the can. Final words for you, Ray Flowers.
FantasyGuru.com. If you haven't picked up the draft guide, understand that the draft guide is part of our full season coverage. If you get the draft guide, you get the entire season. If you get the VIP package, which I'm kind of partial to, you don't only get the articles, you get the opportunity to interact with me and Jeff, in particular, Vlad Sedler, the whole staff, in chat rooms. You'll get a chance to see some live stream stuff. You'll get more podcasts as well. So I would recommend everyone going toward that as well, Jeff. Get the entire season covered for them.
A dozen strategy podcasts already there as part of the draft guide over at fantasyguru.com, the live chats that we're all doing each and every week, the rankings, a ton of strategy articles, tools. We're doing, Ted Schuster and I are doing the big splits breakdown for projected lineups and bullpens and everything, the Burr Report, bullpen usage and reliever ratings that Ray Flowers and I created several years ago. That's always part of our in-season package, which is obviously there now. And I'm telling you people that March 1st, that price goes up. And it may go up before that because as demand rises, so does the price. That's what we call business. So get in early, even if you don't plan on using it until maybe March, whenever your draft is, or during the season, because otherwise you're going to pay more. That's just a little tip from us to you. That will do it. Another episode, Fantasy Baseball Elite. We'll be back later in the week with a new episode. If you like us, give us a rating. If you don't like us, give us a rating. We want to hear from you guys on this deal. Tell a friend, all the fantasy baseball players out there. We'll have daily fantasy content going forward. We will have high stakes leagues going forward, more draft analyzation as well. For baseball guys himself, Ray Flowers, this is Jeff Mance, Fantasy Baseball Elite. See you later, everybody.
Deuces.